Back to My Garden, episode 23.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Do you love homegrown tomatoes? Free report reveals the 5 dirt cheap tools I use to grow 22 types of heirloom tomatoes, including my secret soil booster. Download your copy for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/free report. This episode of Back to My Garden is sponsored by Coffee Royalty. Can you really lose 5, 10, even 20 pounds or more just by switching your coffee and tea? Find out how to drink it for free at www.backtomygarden.com/coffee. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. Today we have an exciting guest coming from Wisconsin. Laurie is passionate about homesteading and gardening and green home living and natural health. Her website is phenomenal, and she writes a weekly weed series. And that's what I found particularly interesting, being very accomplished at growing weeds myself. So I want to welcome to the show Laurie Neverman. Laurie, welcome to Back to My Garden.
Oh, good morning, good afternoon, and good night. Yeah.
Exactly. We got it all covered. Laurie, I look forward to hearing your story, and my guests want to definitely know a little bit about your background. If you want to just take a minute or two, fill us in a little bit about your history, your background, and how you got into gardening.
Well, as you mentioned, I was raised in Northwest Wisconsin, and I was in the garden from an early age, and there's pictures of me in the cabbage patch with my mom and with the little ducks and geese, because there was a dairy farm. She had about 25 herd of cattle, and a head of cattle, I should say, in the herd. And we raised most of our own produce, most of our own meat. So that's how I started out, you know, basically right from the cradle into the dirt. And then I went away to college and studied. I got my undergraduate degree in math with a physics minor, and then did my graduate work at UW-Madison studying renewable energy and energy production and green technologies, that sort of thing. And then I got a job working at what was at the time the world's largest solar water heating flat panel collector system. For some reason, that tripped me up today. And we had over 5,000 solar panels producing over 1 million gallons of hot water for a local meatpacking plant. And then after about 3.5 years there, I was expecting my first child, and they were shutting the plant down. Unfortunately, there was there was a squabble between the folks who owned the solar plant and the water, where the water was being delivered, and the plant was being taken down. And so I was very much pregnant and decided to come home to be with my kids. And then at that point, we were in the suburbs, and we had about a half acre lot, and we filled it from front to back with fruit trees and raised beds and grapevines and everything else we could squeeze in there. We had 2 boys, and as the kids got a little bit older, we really decided to save up, and we wanted to build our dream house out in the country. So after 9 years in the suburbs, we moved out to the country, and that was an adventure in itself, and that's covered on the blog too. Our house is Greenbelt certified and Wisconsin Energy Star certified as well, and so that's it's very green, very energy efficient, non-toxic, and it's and also handicap accessible, because we built it so that we could accommodate older relatives or ourselves, because we're not getting any younger. And then we've been here, 9 years now. So, because we moved out here in 2005, and we have now about an acre of regular garden and fruit trees and long-term plantings that we're putting in, which we'll talk a little bit more about. But yeah, that's kind of the journey, you know, started in the dirt, went away, came back, and kind of come full circle.
Wow, wow, wow. That's a lot. Picture, Laurie, we have listeners in 30th floor condos, and they have like 4 potted plants on a windowsill, and that's their garden. And an acre is like an entire city park.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it? I do feel so blessed that we have the opportunity to be here out in the country. And even though it's a little bit dry and we have extreme winters sometimes, right now it's just really green and lush and gorgeous. That's most of the pictures on my website are from our own yard and gardens here, and you can really see the abundance and the variety of vegetation that we have access to, and it's just wonderful.
Now, for those of you stuck in rush hour traffic listening to this, you know, plug one nostril and inhale the smog, but head over to Lori's blog as soon as you get home. It's phenomenal. Now, Lori's very active on social media. You can follow her at Common Sense Idea on Twitter. And then it's way more than a blog. It's a resource center. It's www.commonsensehome.com. I love how you have a big photo and you can see solar panels to the left-hand side of your property.
Yes, we do have, as I mentioned, the house is Energy Star certified and Greenbelt certified. We have solar water and heating panels, and those were salvaged from that large flat plate collector system. So they provide a good portion of the hot water to our home. The house itself is also designed to accommodate passive solar heating. There's large south-facing windows and a properly sized overhang to keep it from overheating in the summertime. And then we also have a large masonry heating, a wood-burning stove in the basement. And so that also contributes to our heating capacity here with local wood. Well, actually, my brother-in-law has a sawmill, so we get his scraps and burn them up, which is really nice.
Good, good, good. Now, you're on the dream property, and before that, you had the big suburban garden. Talk to me a little bit about your first garden as an adult. What was it like?
Well, you mentioned your readers sometimes being stuck in apartments or limited space. All the way through college, I did have, you know, my windows were always crammed with plants. So they went from college dorm to apartment. So I've always had something green and growing. I just feel that need to have that contact with plants. And it's soothing to work with them, to make things grow when everything else is crazy around you, just to have that little mini oasis. But our first big gardens were when we were in the suburbs, and we had, the lot was around half an acre, and it was a modified spec home, very, you know, cookie cutter type of thing you see in the burbs. And in our backyard, we had 23 raised beds, which we built out of cedar. And then it was really nice because we were built in what had been a nursery. So there were all these old abandoned trees that had a just different mix of trees that didn't make the cut for going into somebody else's yard. So we ended up with them in our yard. And the back was just filled with flowering crab apples, and there was a hawthorn tree. So in spring, it was just gorgeous, filled with blooms. And we hired a tree spade, and we had to move the crab apples out to the corner so we had room to plant our garden. That was a little bit pricey, but it was really a worthwhile investment because we really wanted to save those trees if possible. And then we had some, I don't know if you've seen those, like the column apple trees that they don't bush out. They grow more upright, so you can cram quite a few of them in a really small space. And then we also had some dwarf apple trees, three cherry trees, two peach trees. Oh my gosh, homegrown peaches are so awesome. A little raspberry patch, four grapevines mounted in a trellis along the south side of the house, three different types of currants, another raised bed, lots of flowers. There was very little lawn left. But it was beautiful.
Was it at that point when you started to get into the recipe side? Your website has canning info and recipe info, a lot of self-responsibility and homesteading info. You must be getting into that time of year now when you're canning.
Pretty much, yeah. It just really started to get a more significant harvest within the last week or so. We had a little bit of a cold spring after that long, nasty winter. And so things got off we're a few weeks behind where we should be. But the boys have picked a mess of beans, and actually once we're done with the interview here, we'll be pressure canning our green beans for the season. We typically put up about 50 quarts, and then whatever I have left over still growing after we've put up what we want, I barter with neighbors, which is really nice. So we get swap eggs or chicken or whatever for excess garden produce. With the canning part of things, I did get into it some in the suburbs, but the boys were littler and frankly, they just didn't eat as much. So I started with the simple things, and I do recommend that to people. The water bath canning as opposed to pressure canning, you can do tomato-based products, fruits, jams, jellies in a water bath, pickles, anything that's acidified. And then once you get a little bit more advanced or you want to expand a little bit, I invested in a pressure canner, and we do use that. We can a little bit of broth, some meat, beans, basically anything non-acidic, vegetables, like lots of green beans. And we do a fair amount of drying because it's just nice to have different variety, of course, and then dried foods don't require any refrigeration or freezing like the canned food, so that's also good for in case you're prone to power outages, bad weather, whatnot. And they take up so little space, which is great for urban gardeners. You know, you can dehydrate a bushel basket of stuff and have it fit in a small jar. It's just wonderful. So we use a real mix.
You struck a nerve there. A friend of mine, he bought his first freezer. And big family freezer. He's got four kids. Put $250 worth of meat in it.
Uh-oh.
And you know what happened already. I can finish the story. Sure, power failure. And they lost the whole thing. And insurance covered part of it. But mm-hmm. He said, you know, if I'd spent that on canning vegetables, I'd still have it.
Well, I don't know if your friend has done much in the way of pressure canning or had the option. I know friends have run into that where they've had a power outage and they've taken their pressure canner, put it outside on the propane burner, and canned up a freezer full of meat to preserve it. Whoa. So it can be done. Literally.
I'm in near Toronto, and we had an ice storm December 23rd.
Oh.
And so 2 million people without power for a couple of days. Mm. And most people had their entire Christmas dinner go bad. And so people were having kind of front lawn turkey bakes on December 23rd and December 24th, feeding their neighbors. And you know what it's like in a big city. Half the time you can live it 10 years and not know your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And the sale of generators went through the roof that month.
It always does, yeah.
Very good. I'm interested in the beans. My wife is looking at me because we have a whole ton of beans, and we're exceeding my capacity to eat them. So I'm going to head over to your website and get some ideas. I want to shift gears on you a little bit. You have the big property now with the big garden. What's growing really well this year that you're proud of, and what is frustrating you?
We have some really kicking late cabbages that are about 4 feet across now. And they're in an old manure pile. Cabbages, as you know, love nitrogen. So they're in a well-rotted manure pile. And those things, they're huge. They're taking up all the space I allocated for them and a bit more. And so those will be our storage cabbage in a matter of months. What else is taking off really well?
Sorry, not to lose your train of thought. What do you mean by storage cabbage?
As I mentioned, we do preserve a lot, but we actually grow several different types of cabbages. I don't know how much cabbage growing you do.
I'm more on the cabbage eating side of the equation. I eat a lot of cabbage.
Yeah, well, we have some early cabbage, which those will be harvested like mid-season. They're sizing up now, and they actually look really good too. But the late cabbage are in a little bit better spot, so they're just really getting huge. But the early cabbage will be harvested during the growing season. As a fresh vegetable, I won't try to preserve them. They tend to be a little bit softer cabbage. The heads aren't so densely packed. They're perfect. I mean, you could use them for making sauerkraut, any of the ways you normally cook cabbage. But a storage cabbage tends to have a longer season. The heads will be, you know, if they've developed well, they will be a little larger, a little more densely packed, tend to have a little bit drier consistency, And so some of those will go, some of those will make sauerkraut. We get the big chopper from the neighbors. We got one of those old fashioned ones with like, looks like a wooden washboard type of thing. Beautiful. And you rub the cabbage back and forth and cut a whole bunch really, really quick and just watch out for your fingers. And then some of those will be stripped and put in the root cellar. And they will hold just a couple of months in a cool temperature, you know, cool, damp location. And then we can use them fresh for a couple months beyond what we can harvest them in the garden. So that's a storage cabbage versus a fresh eating cabbage.
Okay, very good. What else is growing really well this year?
All the beans have taken off. Everything's getting really dry, though. We could really use a rain. We started out with a cold, wet spring, and now it's turned into a cool, dry summer, and a lot of things are really struggling. The garlic looks pretty good. The pole beans, we probably picked like 6 gallons of them yesterday, so that's going to be, like I said, we're going to be canning after that. They're nice and thick and lush. Things are filling in and greening up, but it's just not producing as much without that heat. You know how that is. If you don't get that heat, you're not in that temperature range to get the best blossom set. So the stuff that, you know, is blossoms and fruiting is a little bit behind where it should be.
I think we're having the same summer on the other. I'm across the lake from you. I'm kind of on the same latitude as Cleveland.
Okay.
No heat this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pleasant. There's been rain, but everything is late.
Yep.
And to go to the farmer's market, all you hear is grumbling. You know how old farmers are.
Yeah. Well, it's pleasant to be outside, but just not quite the best growing season. But it is what it is. You know, if something doesn't grow, we eat something else. So,
you've got a science background, which I find fascinating. Do you ever do the, I call it the chemistry set test on your soil?
I have. We have the home, very simple, basic pH mm-hmm. testing and the three different main nutrients. I haven't sent it off for a chem lab test. We have had our well water tested to make sure that everything's hunky-dory with that. Because we do have, unfortunately, several large factory farms in our area, but thankfully not immediately next to us. So I, you know, watch for any well contamination from nitrates or other pollutants. And, you know, it's always just, you never know what's out there anymore. Unfortunately,
oh, good
it's
for
just,
you.
We're most, exposed to a lot of stuff.
Most people don't even think about the water. They just take it for granted.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're wrong, right?
That could be the quote of the week.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is one of our raised beds, the pH is nearly 8. It has zero nitrogen. And needless to say, the things growing in it are very unhappy.
Yeah, that's up there.
And we just did the chemistry test, you know, and dropping in all the pills and the colors are changing and you're holding it up to the sunlight and
going, hmm.
No, we're going, aha, of course, we were right. We knew that things were unhappy. You know, the tomatoes are just giant plant, one tomato on it, two tomatoes on it.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
Well,
you know, any friends with a lot of rotten manure that you could hit up?
Well, when you said the cabbage, I go, oh man, I gotta find me some manure and quickly.
Yeah, it really. I tend to be a rather, I guess, not too fancy gardener for the most part. I think if I ever write a book, it'll be like the Messy Gardener's Handbook to Gardening because it's organized chaos. And one of the things we'll do is I have a neighbor right next door who raises steers and he'll clean out his barn and we'll just basically have him back up the spreader to one of the beds in springtime and that bed will get the well-aged manure that is sat for a better part of a year at his place. And I'll just fill the entire bed with rotten manure like a foot deep and then we'll plant pumpkins and squash, like the really heavy feeders in there, mulch it, plant the heavy feeders in there, and just let it break down right in the garden bed for another year. And then that I've been slowly rotating through the different beds in the garden, and it just, yeah, really gives everything a kickstart.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's wisdom gold right there. I hope people are taking notes. Actually, if you're driving, keep both hands on the wheel. You can always do it later. Lori, the listeners find real connection with our guests through mistakes. Now, you've got a lot of experience in gardening. Have you ever had a catastrophic oopsie in the garden that maybe you can look back now and humorously share it with our listeners?
Catastrophic fail.
Have you ever done anything so terribly wrong you're almost embarrassed?
Do I have to admit this on public? No.
Change the names of the guilty.
No. Probably the biggest perennial failure that I do and have engaged in more than one time is just trying to cram too much in too little space. It's like, oh, you put those little seeds in and they're so tiny and they look so innocent. Or you put your little transplants in and they're so small, you know, they're only a few inches tall. And then in the later, it's like you have corn. Like the first, my mom came to visit us back in the suburbs. And my corn plants were about maybe a foot tall and she's looking and she kind of looks down. She looks at me and looks back down. She says, got those kind of close there, don't you, daughter? Because they're like packed like sardines in a can. And needless to say, those poor corn plants never did produce much other than stalks because they were just like packed in there. And yeah, I've grown tomato thickets that were utterly impenetrable. And, you know, it's like I can see there's tomatoes off in the distance, but you're trying to do gymnastics or maybe martial arts to get you into the middle of the patch. Must reach tomato. A thud, you know, and falling over in the patch and just like, oh my gosh, that's probably my biggest perennial failure right there. It's like, I'm sure it'll fit. It's all good. And no.
Fantastic. If you haven't heard you're doing it wrong from a senior gardener, then you're not trying hard enough.
You know, you mentioned the weed thing at the beginning of the show. That's another thing. She's like, oh, that plant is pretty. I'll just let that go out to seed. And then you end up with 5,000 baby whatevers completely dominating your entire garden. It's like, no. Most weed seeds will persist in the soil for decades. Don't let your weeds seed out in your garden. There are other seeds there. They will come back the next time you will have more volunteers. Don't let stuff seed out in your garden. Oh, yeah. One tip that people, yeah, absolutely. Love your weeds, use your weeds, but don't let them seed out in your garden.
That's a very topical point on Laurie's blog. Head over to commonsensehome.com. It's the weekly weed series, learning to use your weeds. That brilliant idea for a blog topic.
Well, you know, there's a dedicated core of people who come back to those posts, but it's not stuff that generally goes viral because people are like, nah, who cares?
Yeah.
But they're really, it's something that I am fascinated with. And, you know, I go out, I see my weeds. It's like visiting with old friends. You know, it's like this one's high in magnesium, so it's good for muscle cramps. This one, you crush it and you put it on bug bites and they magically disappear. This one has more vitamin A than spinach. You know, it's just, it's a whole new set of crops, and heck, almost anybody can grow weeds, right?
I love how you, because it does, they do have properties, and 200 years ago, they were medicine in some cases.
Well, a lot of times, most of the weeds that are growing in my area are not native, and the majority of them were brought over by people at one point or another because they were very useful for food or for medicine. Or for dyeing, or for, you know, any number of other uses. For cordage, you know, they used to make their own ropes, their own fabrics, and they used, like, stinging nettle. Stinging nettle makes stunningly strong rope, and you can even use it to make fabric and bed sheets, which you wouldn't think, you know, like, ow, that you want to be laying in that. But supposedly they wear like iron, and if properly prepared, are comfortable. I have not tried this, but maybe someday.
If you have tried it, send in an email to Lori.
Yeah, I want to know.
Twitter. We'll share the photos. Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play 5 quick questions. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Attention gardeners, do you love perennial flowers? Get a free online catalog and 10% off your first order of bulbs at Bloomin' Bulbs. I set up a link just for podcast listeners. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/bulb for your special bonus. Our half hour is rapidly vanishing, Laurie, and now's the time in the show where we get to play my favorite game. It's called Five Quick Questions. This is where you... Did you say dun-dun-dun?
You believe it.
Fantastic. This is your chance to drop wisdom and experience to the beginner or rookie gardener. Are you ready to play?
Always. Hit me.
Number one, in your opinion, what do you think stops most people from trying gardening?
It's a four-letter word. W-O-R-K. It does require work, you know, time, effort. And I think people think that it's going to be more work and they just can't make time for it in their day. I mean, people are so busy. But, you know, if you start small, just stick to the things that you enjoy most and keep it manageable, and then you can make it happen.
Brilliant. Question two. You've learned from experienced gardeners and books and trial and error. What is the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
Try it again. If it doesn't work out the first time, do it over. That's the best thing about gardening, is that every year you get a chance to try something new. And so just don't give up.
And you'll have 4 foot across cabbages.
Yeah, which are just gorgeous.
For my friends overseas, that's a meter.
Yeah.
A little bit over a meter.
A little bit over, yeah. They're big.
Number three, internet's a big place, amazing resources for gardeners. If you had just two websites to share with a rookie gardener, what would those two websites be?
Well, they got to come visit me, of course.
That goes over.
And, you know, Mother Earth News, for all that they're a magazine and whatnot, they do have a lot of really in-depth resources. And Organic Gardening Magazine also has a really lot of nice basic beginner tutorials, too.
Beautiful. Question four. I love to read gardening books. I'm expanding my library. What is a book that you think I must read this year?
The Lost Language of Plants, which is not a conventional gardening book, but it'll blow your mind.
Lost Language of Plants. Okay, listeners, I'll put all these links in the show notes because that's a new one on me. Do you know the author?
Stephen Harrod Bruner. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but he has a number of herbalism books. It's stunning how the plants communicate with each other. And simple snippet. For instance, there's a healthy grove of trees. And normally, you know, if you girdle a tree, you cut the bark all the way around, tree will die. Well, they have had this where they have girdled trees in a healthy grove of trees. The other trees will actually pitch in and they will send this tree nutrients. They will change their chemistry. They will send the tree nutrients and keep it alive longer than it would normally exist, like multiple years potentially. And the tree that should die will stay alive. And they'll girdle a tree growing separately and it'll just die very quickly. That's normally a way of killing trees. But the other trees will actually act to keep a tree alive, or a pest infestation will move in. The trees will change their chemistry. They'll basically designate what was ordinarily a perfectly healthy tree. One tree will be picked to be the fall guy. It will change its chemistry, make itself more susceptible to the insects. The insects will move into that host tree and buy the other tree's time for whatever predator eats that insect to come in and get it back under control again. So they'll designate a sacrificial tree to save the grove. It's just bizarre, the stuff that goes on. So things I had never heard of before. I think you'll enjoy it.
I'm nodding along. Yes, I will. Physics, absolutely. You know, I have a lot of listeners who have teenagers. And when I was in high school, everyone said, oh, get into computers. Well, all the computer jobs are being done for, you know, $4 an hour in Asia.
Yeah, a lot of the basic stuff now, yeah.
I think the future, if you're a teenager, learn horticulture. Food never goes out of style.
Everybody has to eat. It's true.
Question five. Next year, look into your crystal ball. Make a prediction. What's the number one thing every gardener should try to grow next year?
Well, the perennial favorite is always homegrown tomatoes. And there's a reason, because they just taste so much different than the little round orbs that you find in the store trying to pass themselves off as tomatoes. Find ripe in anything, though, is awesome. But yeah, tomatoes, you know, they're always a favorite.
Do you have a particular favorite you're growing?
Boy, that's like picking my favorite kid. I grow around 30 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes. So, yeah, there's a good thing to have all this space. But for my, if I had to pick like a one great all-purpose tomato that we use because we do a lot of salsa and sauce, I'd say Opaka. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it. It's O-P-A-L-K-A. Monster paste tomato. And Amish paste is another great big meaty slicing or paste tomato. And those two are probably my top all-time favorites. If I could only grow one tomato type, it would be one of those two.
Nice. If I can repay the favor, we have one this year called an OSU Blue.
Oh, yeah. I saw that on your Facebook page. Those are so cool.
Crazy. Like, when it was growing, the leaves were blue, the stems were blue. I go, oh, no, that it's not
it's
healthy.
Sick.
Blue. And when you're, like, you know, halfway across the yard, it's so blue.
So are the tomatoes on it ripe yet?
Well, how do you know? Because it's blue, so I know. I know they turn kind of a pinky red at the bottom when they're ready to go, but mm-hmm. I've been caught going over and just pinching them a little bit to make sure.
Oh, don't pinch your tomatoes.
I know. Poke, poke, poke. I'm still very much an enthusiastic amateur in the garden sometimes. My wife just shakes her head at me like, you're doing it wrong, you know. We have a great time.
There's always something to learn in the garden. That's one of the great things about it. It's like no matter how many years you've been doing it, there's always an opportunity to try something new.
Okay, dear listener, head over to Lori's Twitter at Common Sense Idea. Follow her and share her wonderful stuff on social media. Her blog/resource/, oh, it's an awesome site, is www.commonsensehome.com. Make sure you share all that good info and send her some comments. Lori, thank you so much for being a guest on Back to My Garden today. I want to give you the last word.
Oh, it's been great. It's been a lot of fun. And just, I had to encourage people, just try it. Just try growing something, no matter what space you have, even if it's just a pot of herbs in a window. Just, there's something in us that is nurtured by growing things, no matter how big or how small. And I think plants are healing. And I encourage people to explore that, you know, whatever space, whatever time they have available. Don't be afraid. Don't freak out. It's not that much work. Just do it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Lori. You were great. Attention, garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate expert gardeners from around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP.